Back together again, you and I kicking off a brand new week on Monday, September 9th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We welcomed attorney, former Time Magazine senior reporter, and professor emeritus of political science at St. Peter's University, Alan Sanders, to chat about Tuesday night's presidential debate. Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill also added his thoughts on the big debate as well. Love having this gentleman on, one of our go-to experts, longtime guest here, attorney, former Time Magazine senior reporter, and currently professor emeritus, political science at St. Peter's University, Professor Alan Sanders. Professor, it's Paul again here in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And boy, Professor, you know, normally I look at two events, conventions, which are big infomercials and debates, and you know, I kind of yawn. Maybe I shouldn't for debates, but boy, this one, I would think more than some of the debates, Professor, we've had in the past few years, this one tomorrow night might actually mean something. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. This is an important debate for both Mr. Trump and Ms. Harris. Both need to introduce themselves to the American public in light of a new campaign that has emerged since President Biden removed himself from the race. For Kamala Harris, it's important for her to define herself. She's still not that well known among large segments of the public. So the debate, which will be watched by a lot of people, is a good opportunity for her to define herself and to come forward as a strong, competent leader, and she needs to do that. That's important for her. For Trump, it's going to be a challenge as well, because we know that Trump has had trouble restraining himself when he's faced women opponents in the past on the debate stage. And so he needs to show that he can be restrained and responsible, but of course he's unpredictable and he's known for outlandish behavior all the time. So that's a challenge for him as well.
The fact that the mics will be muted when a person is not speaking, Professor, I think to your point there about Mr. Trump, I think that helps him. I can understand why the Harris campaign did not like that, because I thought, despite President Biden's lackluster performance, that helped Mr. Trump in the first debate back in June.
Yeah, I think it did. But look, let's look at it from the public's point of view. The Harris campaign is banking on Trump being unpredictable, combative, incoherent, and rambling, as he's shown himself to be in the past. But a debate should be a debate. And so I've thought that that should be the rule in general. Let each person speak about what they want to accomplish for the country and give them turns. And I think having the mics off is a good debate format. I also think having no audience, likewise, we don't need cheering from the peanut gallery.
Exactly.
We need to hear what these candidates have to say to the American public.
Listen. I mean, you and I both know, because I've watched it a few times, the first Kennedy-Nixon debate, which is considered the Magna Carta of debates. I mean, it was two guys sitting at a table with one or two questioners. We you're right, Professor. We don't need, this is not Wheel of Fortune. We don't need a studio audience. I agree with you.
No, we don't. I mean, these are hyped or kind of political boxing matches. If you want to see boxing, go to an arena. A policy debate should be a policy debate in which the American people are told, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what my opponent wants to do. Harsh criticism in a debate is fine, but it's a debate. It's not a political boxing match. Mm. And so I think the rules are fine, and I think this should be the rules going forward, really, for all political debates.
Professor Alan Sanders is the guest, Professor Emeritus, St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Professor, I've been reading stuff over the weekend, last week or so. Maybe you've seen it, too. People are wondering now, second-guessing in sports and politics. We know how it happens. But the choice of Tim Walz versus taking Josh Shapiro, perhaps to avoid blowback from a far left of the party. And I'm reading here now that there are some people saying, well, you know, she's kind of losing a little steam in Pennsylvania. Maybe that wasn't the right move. Well, I don't think I've spoken to you since that move was made. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think she might have made a mistake going with Tim Walz or not?
It's hard to tell. There's always kind of Monday morning quarterbacking about this. Walz is a fine candidate. He's an everyday kind of guy. He portrays himself as an everyday kind of guy. He's folksy. He's plain spoken. He appeals to people in the upper Midwest. He comes from a rural background. Pennsylvania certainly has its share of rural communities. So it's hard to tell. Mr. Shapiro is a much more forceful kind of guy, more aggressive kind of campaigner. Yes, certainly he would be a good candidate for Pennsylvania, but it's hard to tell that Mr. Waltz is not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were many factors that went into it. Part of it is, can she get along with her vice presidential pick? There were some hints that perhaps she might not be able to have gotten along as easily with Governor Shapiro, because Governor Shapiro has ambitions of his own.
Sure.
He wants to make his mark, you know, for his own political future. Governor Waltz's own personal ambitions are a little more ambiguous. It's not clear whether he's seeking anything beyond the vice presidency, but Shapiro certainly is and was. So, you know, there's no question that there's been anti-Semitism from the Democratic left. I wouldn't call them progressive. I don't think anti-Semitism is anything progressive. It's actually, you know, a pretty backward view of the world to have an anti-Semitic view. So there's nothing progressive about it, and they should never be called progressive. Progressive left anti-Semitists should never be called progressive. There certainly was that element in it. You know, Vice President Kamala Harris is married to a Jewish man.
Yeah.
And so whatever anti-Semitism exists certainly, you know, tarnishes those people when criticizing Mr. Emhoff or the vice president herself. So it's hard to know. You know, Monday morning quarterbacking will always occur. You know, whoever loses the general election come November, you can bet that there'll be a lot of people who say, I told you so. You should have done it this way, that way. Political campaigns are a matter of both skill, talent, and sheer luck. And the luck element, you know, just cannot be factored in a rational way.
Yeah, and a lot of people who write books after the campaigns. Professor, also, I keep telling my listeners here, because it's something I think that people miss, no matter who wins, Mr. Trump again or Ms. Harris for the first time, is it one of the real elephants in the room here going to be the makeup of the Senate? Because if the Senate is, and by all projections, probably, although we don't know, going to lean or go somewhat toward the Republican side, and unless the filibuster is ended, which the Republicans won't do, I mean, there's not a whole lot that can get done without a working cooperation from the Senate.
Well, that's right, and that's our system of checks and balances, which we have to live with. Sometimes it works well. Other times it's a genuine obstacle to progress. One of the things I really do fault presidential campaigns of both Republicans and Democrats is that, you know, we focus on the presidential campaign, and each of the candidates says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, make all kinds of promises.
Yeah.
But those promises, you point out, won't come to be unless they have a compliant Congress, that is to say, Congress of the same party. So I wish sometimes the candidates would say, okay, I promise to do this and I promise to do that, but please make sure that you vote Republican or you vote Democratic,
yeah,
you know, whoever's making the argument, to say, this is what I will need in order to accomplish the goals I have set for my presidency. We never hear enough of that, and I think many people forget that.
Professor, do you have a preferred for these debates and big events, debates and conventions, do you have a preferred snack and or beverage while you're sitting back soaking all this in?
Coffee, so I can stay awake and be able to comment about it the following morning.
Right. When our friend Frank says, Professor, your first interview is 5:30 tomorrow morning, right?
Right.
Professor Emeritus, Political Science, Alan Sanders, St. Peter's University in Jersey City. Professor, always good to chat with you. Take care, and we'll chat down the road, I'm sure. Thank you.
Great. Take care. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. All righty. Professor Alan Sanders, Professor Emeritus, Poli-Sci, at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. He's with us every Monday right about this time. Substack.com blogger and Connecticut News Junkie columnist Terry Cowgill joins us. Terry, do you have your pork rinds, your peanuts, your potato chips, your adult beverages all set for tomorrow night?
Yes, I went to the HEB. That's the huge supermarket chain here in Texas.
Yeah.
And you can get anything you want, and it's a fair price. Everything is so much cheaper down here than it is in Connecticut.
Wait a minute, hold on, Terry, let's rewind that. Say that sentence again. Everything is what? Where?
Everything is much cheaper in Texas than it is in Connecticut, and I can tell you that firsthand.
Thank you.
I understand, of course, there's no income tax.
Yeah.
But real estate tax, property taxes are high.
Sure.
Because, I mean, the money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And the sales tax is a little higher, too, although not that much.
Mm-hmm.
In general, it's cheaper to live down here. Gasoline, I don't know what it is in Connecticut. I think I paid $2.75.
Oh my
recently.
God!
even diesel, you can even get diesel for under $3. So
wow,
yeah, it's a different place. And finally, the heat is broken.
Oh, so
it's longer 106 degrees.
So I
woke up this morning with 65 degrees,
oh,
and the
my
humidity
God.
Was down. Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Oh man. So Terry, seriously, before we get to an interesting point you brought up about a major American company here. What are your thoughts heading into tomorrow night? You know, you and I think last time we talked, you had said, hey, Ms. Harris, do a few news conferences here. Open up yourself to the press. And, you know, this would be good training for tomorrow night. Let your points of your platform get out there. How do you think that's gone so far, Terry?
Well, you know, I don't think that she did anything wrong, really, in that interview with Dana Bash on CNN. I don't think she hurt herself. I don't think she helped herself. I think it was right in the middle, as far as I could tell. I think one of the things, though, about the debate coming up, and it's going to be interesting because so many people, so much is riding on this debate because as I see it now, or as it stands now, it looks like it's going to be the only one. Between now and November. Do mm-hmm. you know of any others that have been
scheduled? No. They say this is likely the only one, and I guess we may have one with Tim Walz and J.D. Vance, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, oh, God, that should be interesting. That raises the stakes, right? Because mm-hmm. If this is going to be the only one, if you have a bad night, you don't really have a chance to redeem yourself. So This will be a very big deal, perhaps even a bigger deal than it would otherwise. And then I also had a question. I actually wanted to get your thoughts mm-hmm. on this because there's been a lot of discussion on Threads, which is where all of the crazy left-wing people go to complain about the mainstream news media
yeah.
being too conservative and
yeah.
too Trump.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you. This. So the New York Times, the Washington Post, they're both in the tank for Trump.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, this is what's happened, I suppose. Turnabout is fair play. But they're all saying, okay, so Dana Bash didn't – not Dana Bash, but every time there's a debate
yeah.
that Trump is in,
yeah.
all he does is lie, and the moderators don't fact-check him. And so that raises the question, is it the job of debate moderators
yeah.
to – fact check the candidates? And I don't, what is your thought? Do you think that the moderator should step in and call BS on the candidates when they are not telling the truth?
No, because I don't think anybody, Terry, can do that with a requisite amount of impartiality. It's like a good baseball umpire. You're always going to upset 50% of the people 50% of the time. And to that point, you and I were in a Facebook chat where I know this was brought out, to the point where, well, you know, people know what Trump is. I mean, his supporters, Terry, they know that he lies and does this stuff, and it doesn't matter. So, you know, it's... I've done a couple of broadcast debates, and the last thing I was thinking was doing any sort of fact checking. I just had to watch the time and the clock and all that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the job of the candidates to fact check each other.
Yeah,
and now it's different in an interview, okay? And mm-hmm. I have interviewed candidates for office. Sometimes on the air and sometimes for print publication.
Yeah.
And if they say things that are not true or inaccurate, I will call
sure,
them.
Sure, sure.
But in a debate, I don't think so. I think you want the exchanges to be as freewheeling
mm-hmm.
and as spontaneous as you can, because you're more likely to get the real person in a situation like that.
Yeah.
And so I would say, and that's one of the reasons that Joe Biden did so poorly in that
yeah.
first debate. Because Donald Trump was coming out with all this BS, and the way Biden's mind was working,
yeah.
certainly at least on that night,
yeah.
he was totally incapable of calling out the BS.
Yeah.
And I think Kamala Harris will be a much different kind of opponent. The only time I've ever seen her in a debate before this was 2019, mm-hmm. when she was a candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination.
Yeah.
And she stopped just short of calling Joe Biden a racist.
Yes, with the busing stuff. Oh, my God. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Terry, we've got about 90 seconds left here. I want to squeeze in the thing you did or you're talking about. It's kind of this unmentioned mm-hmm. campaign issue here regarding U.S. Steel.
Yeah, so U.S. Steel is trying to be acquired by Nippon Steel, which is Japan's largest steel company. I think this is a really undercovered story right now because of the presidential campaign. And I thought, well, I'll write about this. Because maybe I can write about something other than politics. Well, of course, you can't really do that because this is also being politicized.
Yeah.
But anyway, my take on it is that they should probably allow it. The federal government should allow it. But of course, the unions are apoplectic about this because they think that there's going to be job losses. But the interesting thing is, in terms of the candidates for office, as you would think that Trump would take one position and Biden Harris would take the other, but actually they're both against this, which is very interesting. They have a rare a degree of agreement on this, so it's a very interesting topic. And anybody wants to see it can go to my Substack, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. But I think it is really worth watching because this would form the largest steel company in the world, Japan is an ally. I don't really think there are national security implications to this, as there would be, say, if China's largest steel company wanted to acquire them. So there's a lot to look at here. But I would urge people to take a close look at it because I think it's an underreported story. Mm-hmm.
Check that out at Terry's blog on Substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. He also writes for the Connecticut News Junkie. Terry, enjoy the Lone Star State, and we shall chat next week. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm headed for a margarita.
Nice, nice. Man close to my own heart, Terry Cowgill.